see everyone
out. Good to have everyone back that was away, traveling out of the country or wherever you may have been. We are glad to have you here this morning. As we close out the year, 2015, I get the wonderful opportunity to wrap the bow around this year and finish it off as we wrap up my fulfilling my purpose. And as we will begin next year looking at our new theme, and I'll go ahead and tell you what that is: be holy, for I am holy, God says. So we're going to spend a year talking about being holy people. So go ahead and buckle your bootstraps, because it ain't going to be fun, because it's going to cause for a lot of introspection, which is good for us, I believe. We'll begin that next week, and I believe Michael will kick that off next week. But we've been talking about recreation this quarter, and that's what I'm going to focus on this morning. And we've talked a lot about what really the original meaning of the word recreation is. And because of that, yesterday as I was reading up on my hockey team, I couldn't help but notice this quotation from our goalie. And he said, "Sometimes when you have bumps and bruises, or even mentally, the only thing that helps is just rest. And you never get that during the season." By the way, what they had, the National Hockey League, they have a 3-day mandatory break over the Christmas holiday. 2 days before, and then they play the day after. So they have a mandatory 3-day. And what he's saying is that sometimes when you're in the season, you're mentally beat up. And you're physically beat up. And the only thing that can cure that is rest. The 3 days in which they had it. So he went on to say, so I think guys try to take advantage of that. And some guys have some nagging injuries, or maybe haven't played as well as they've liked. And you get some time to recharge and start over again. And isn't that what we talked about all quarter long, about the purpose of our recreation? Is it is to restore back to health. It is to get us back so that when we get up the next day, or when we start our work again, we're ready to go. We're ramped up. We are excited about fulfilling our purpose as a Christian. And so we looked at several different verses. We looked at 1 Timothy chapter 4, where we really saw that bodily exercise profits a little. But you remember that Michael emphasized it does profit. It does value. Those hockey players, it's no longer recreation for them to play hockey. It may be recreation for you to slap on the old rollerblades or to slap on the ice skates or whatever the case may be. For them, it's not. For them, it's like you going into the office on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and sometimes Sunday. That's what their job is, and they need that recreation too. Just like we need it. It does have value. But we also talked about how we see the problem that oftentimes when we get so wrapped up in our recreation, we forget what our purpose is. We forget that we are a Christian in those activities that are good for us. But they become our end-all. They become our be-all. And so we really talked about what a Christian needs to be in that. And Michael spent a lesson talking about needing to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. And I'll just harpen back. Remember that comes from Matthew chapter 5 there in the Sermon on the Mount. But I'll just harpen back to that statement of sometimes we're too dim and sometimes we're too bright. And we know the difference. And maybe we see that of our friends, or we see that of ourselves. And so one of the biggest things we have in recreation today, and someone asked me to make sure I mention this particular thing, is social media, right? That's a big recreation for people. They go onto Facebook, or they go onto Snapchat, or they go onto Twitter, and they go to Instagram, and they find out what is going on in people's lives. Or they let people know what is going on in their life. But they sit there and they read it for hours and hours and hours. And so bosses have had to put the block on it.
Because people sit there and they read it for hours and hours because there is recreation. And one of the things we think about when our recreation in itself is not wrong, but it's so time consuming that it gets in the way of our other roles as Christians, it becomes a problem. And so if you're on those social media platforms, you know people who are shining too bright or who are not shining bright enough. And so maybe they've got a pet peeve. And it's a Bible pet peeve. But they're going to make sure that they're always going to bring it up. They're always going to post about it. Anytime they find an article about it, we've got to retweet this. We've got to pass it on. And if you've got someone that you follow, you probably get sick and tired of it at some point. Unless they agree with your position. And then you like it, right? Then he goes on. But the point is, we all use that in our everyday life. And people, they find joy in that. I personally do not. But others do. And it is a good recreation, but it is something to be cautious about. And so, it's one way in which people try maybe their hardest to be lights. Because I do have an audience. I do have people who follow me, and I do have people who listen to me. And that is absolutely true. But I'll tell you what. People can also see what you're doing by the things you put on there. Because they're there to look at the pictures. And they can see what you're participating in. And they can see what you're wearing. And you can either be a light, or you can be a light that a basket has gone over it, or you wish someone would put a basket over it. Maybe would be the better way of saying that. But it says who you are. And we use these things, and they can be used for good, but they also can be used to show what our true treasures are. So we talked about being lights and salt of the world. But we also talked about how from 2 Timothy chapter 3, that we need to be lovers of God rather than lovers of pleasures. And we saw that that would happen. People would be lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And they would claim to be religious people. They would have a form of godliness. But yet they wouldn't hold, they would deny its power. So what you have is you have religious people who get too caught up in the pleasures. And we talked about that wasn't sexual pleasures, it was just anything that feels good. It was anything that makes you feel better. And we get so wrapped up in the love of those things, the pursuit of those things, that we forget that we are Christians. And we forget that God comes first. And so when I'm on the sports field or I'm on the court, I've got no problem cursing out the person who is across from me or who has made me mad. But yet I would have a problem doing that if it was just some one of you. And we throw it out the window because, well, that just happens on the field. Or we go into places and we wear things or we participate in things in which we wouldn't do under normal circumstances. But because it's recreation, we do it. And we just say, well, it's just for this time. It's only for an hour. It's only 2 hours. Whatever the case. It's not who I am. Well, what defines who I am? Things that I do define who I am. And so we become, well, I'd rather have this pleasure in my life, and I don't care if it is short, I don't care if it is long, and I don't care what God thinks about it. I just want this pleasure. But I'll hold on to this form that I am a godly and I am a good person. But yet this other thing really is the driving force in our lives. And how that is not what my purpose is in recreation. My purpose in recreation, again, is to have that and remember God comes first. But then we also saw that the priorities of a Christian in his recreation. We talked a lot about that. Of how God has to come first in all of these activities that are good and that are right. And so we have to make time for worship. Remember Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, on the first day of the week, the disciples gathered together to break bread. And you remember that when we read that in Acts chapter 20, Paul is on a journey and he is not at his home congregation, but he's on a journey and he's on a trip back to Jerusalem, and he still finds brethren to worship with on the first day because it was the first day. Vacation did not supersede worshiping the Lord. But we also saw that we not only need to make priority to worship God, but to fellowship with one another. As we saw back in Acts chapter 2, right? Where the Christians were daily eating their bread house to house. And how we're told in 1 Peter 4 to be hospitable to one another. And how that's not a suggestion, but a command. And a Christian has to make those priorities in their life because they don't just happen naturally most of the time. You have to train yourself. You have to prepare yourself. And you have to live that out. And we talked a lot about a lot of different things. But with those things in mind, remembering what the purpose of recreation is and the need for that, and remembering how the priorities and the purpose of all those types of things, I want us to now, for the rest of our time, I want us to turn to Jesus and His disciples for just a moment. Remember, now go ahead and open up to Mark chapter 6. We're going to be in the book of Mark the rest of the time. But Tom just read for us from Matthew chapter 14. He just read to us the story where John the Baptist is murdered by Herod. And you remember why he was murdered by Herod? Because he was telling Herod, you are married to your brother Philip's wife, and it is not lawful for you to have her. And so she hated him, and Herod wanted to kill him, but you remember he was afraid of the people. Because the people believed that John was a prophet. And so he didn't do anything about it. He was scared. Well, it was his birthday. And his stepdaughter apparently comes and dances for him. What kind of dance? I don't know. But it was a good enough dance that he said, I'll give you whatever you want. And I don't know how young she was. But at the request of her mother, young enough that mother was influential. But we also know that our parents are influential even when we're grown adults, aren't they? But at the request of her mother, she asked for the head of John the Baptist. And he was sorry. But he still did it anyway. He chopped his head right on off, brought it on the silver platter, gave it to her. And Jesus, being the Christ, felt nothing. No, that wasn't what it said, was it? What it said was when he heard about this, he went into a secluded place. Because he's human. Because when you lose your cousin, you hurt. When you lose your biggest helper, you hurt. And when you lose the person that is called the greatest outside of the kingdom of heaven, you hurt. And you want to get away. Because you need to start over. And so he's in this secluded place, and he's around the Sea of Galilee, and we don't know the secluded place, but he tries to go into a secluded place when he heard about that. And that's where Mark chapter 6 comes in. Michael has used Mark chapter 6, and I want you to see if you remember how we used Mark chapter 6, beginning in verse 30. Actually, let's begin in verse 29. So when his disciples heard, and that's John's disciples, they came and they took away his body and they laid it in the tomb. That's the verse that John's disciples buried John the Baptist. So verse 30, the apostles gathered together with Jesus, and they reported to him all that he had done, all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, here it is, come away by yourselves to a secluded place and rest a while. Jesus, after hearing about John the Baptist, He wanted rest. And he knew his disciples needed rest. They had been out. They had been performing miracles. They had been teaching. They had been rejected. They had been accepted. But notice what the rest of the verse says. For they were going with so many, were coming and going, that they did not even have time to eat. They've been so busy, they've forgotten or haven't been allowed to eat because of these great crowds. And here they are, they're tired, they're wore out, they're sad. He says, come away. So they went away in the boat to a secluded place by themselves. And you can probably just imagine what it feels like in the boat. Man, we're getting away. I can't wait till we get on shore. Well, verse 33. The people saw them going, and many recognized them, and they ran there together and on foot for all the cities, and they got there ahead of them. And they get close to shore. There are the people. You know what I'm doing? Hitting that reverse button on them rows. We're going backwards. But when Jesus went ashore, he saw a large crowd and he felt compassion for them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. You see what happens? Is they're so bright they can't be hidden. They're trying to get to a secluded place, but they can't get away. And when they needed rest, and when they needed recreation, guess what? They still remembered their priorities. They remembered their purpose and had compassion on them and taught them. He's trying his best to get away, but they needed him. And he goes through. And this is when he feeds those 5,000, right? They're out there, and the disciples come, send them away so they can go eat bread. He says, you give them something to eat. And I wonder what went through their heads when he said, you give them something to eat. We can't. But what do you have? 5 loaves and 2 fish. How many of us are being fed on 5 loaves and 2 fish? 13 of us? 13 grown men? They didn't even have enough for themselves, would be the point. And Jesus says, bring it to me. And he brought it. And he turned those great fish, feeding everyone, 5,000 men, that didn't include the women and the children, and they had 12 baskets left over. And he did that while he was trying to get away. So he sends his disciples away after feeding them, and he gets them on the boat, and they go across the boat. So verse 46, as they were going across, after bidding them farewell, he left for the mountain to pray. He still was looking for his time with God. He was still looking for his recreation, the thing in which would recharge him, his prayer life. But he had a purpose to fulfill. So, he goes on, and the story would have that he comes back and he finds them on the boat, all those different types of things, and he goes through that region and he's healing, he's performing miracles. But guess what they still need? They still need to go away. They still need time away from these crowds. And so notice in chapter 7 of Matthew, or of Mark, that from verse 24, after he's been teaching, he's been performing these miracles, he gets up and he goes away to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And I put it up here on the screen of how far Tyre and Sidon is away. Tyre is some 35 miles away. That should be far enough to get away from the crowd, right? Sidon is about 50 miles away from Capernaum, from his home, from the area in which was his base. So he's going away, and so notice in verse 24 that when he entered a house, he wanted no one to know. Again, he's trying to escape. He's trying to get that recreation time. But that pesky woman, that Gentile woman, she said, I got a daughter, and she's got a demon. And oh, yeah, heal her and follow me at the feet. He's like, I've been sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Yeah, but even the dogs, she said, they get the crumbs from the master's table. And he said, whoa. And he heals her daughter. And so verse 29, because of the answer, go, and the demon left. So verse 30, going back to her home, she found the child lying on the bed and the demon having left. And verse 31, and again he went out from the region of Tyre, and he came to Sidon, to the Sea of Galilee, within the region of Decapolis. He wanted to get away, but he couldn't escape. He could not escape, so guess what he had to do? Do what he always does. Show compassion. Even when he was looking for himself. So the next place he tries to go, going back to work, is the Sea of Galilee. Back home, so he goes back to 35 miles. He goes to this region of Decapolis, the region of 10 cities. And he's going about and he's teaching and he's performing miracles again in those places. But notice verse 1 of chapter 8. So in those days, as he's in that region, there again was a large crowd and they had nothing to eat. And Jesus called his disciples and he said to him, surprise, surprise, I feel compassion for the people. Because they remain with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. What was on Jesus' mind? These people, they don't have anything. They've been with me for a period of 3 days and they're hungry. And if I send them away, verse 3, I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way. And some of them have come from a great distance. So what's he do? I can't send them away because he's concerned and he knows that they need the rest. They need the recharge. Because if they don't get the physical, they're not going to be able to handle that spiritual. They're going to pass out along the way. So what's he do? How many fish you got? What you got? They had a little more this time. But not enough. And again, he takes what is there. He feeds 4,000 men with that. All the while, probably still trying to get away. But notice in verse 10 what he immediately did after feeding them. After 4,000 were fed, verse 9, he sent them away and immediately entered the boat and his disciples and came to the district of Dalmatha, or however you say that. Don't have a clue. But guess what happens when he gets there? Verse 11. The Pharisees came and they argued with him. Anybody like to get in an argument when you're exhausted? So guess what he does when he finishes the argument? Verse 14, or verse 13. Leaving them, he embarked again and went to the other side. Okay, I gotta get away. He goes to the other side of the sea. And 14, we learn that the disciples haven't had the rest or the clarity in which they need. Verse 14. So when they had forgotten to take bread, and they did not have more than one loaf in the boat with them, and he was teaching them. So he's teaching them, beware of the leaven of the scribes and the Pharisees. And they hear leaven and they think, we forgot bread. You ever have that? You get so wrapped up and you get so distracted that you just forget something that is vital. We forgot bread. And Jesus turns it on. He says, don't you understand? Haven't you seen what I've done? How many did you have when we fed the 5,000? 5 and 2. How many about when the 4? 7 and 4. Do you not understand verse 16 he said? He can handle it. He can give it. But yet, they were so wrapped up in all of this, they just couldn't get it. And so you say, Wes, what in the world does that have to do with fulfilling my purpose? What was the job of the apostles? The job of the apostles, after Jesus was raised from the dead, was to be witnesses of all the things in which he taught. of all the things at which he did. And if they're not clear when he's teaching to them, it goes in one ear and out the other. And we see that very frequently. So what was promised to them on that night in which Jesus was betrayed is that the Holy Spirit was going to be sent to them. And they were going to get the Holy Spirit that would remind them of all the things that he taught, he said, and that he did. But Jesus has something very important that he is about to begin to teach these disciples. And he needed them rested. He needed them clearly thinking so that they would be able to go out and fulfill their purpose. And you say, what is that? Consider here in chapter 8, this next place that he flees. Verse 27. So he went out among the villages to Caesarea Philippi. And here's our final place where we're going to look at this morning. How far is Caesarea Philippi away? It is about 27 miles. Again, it is a considerable distance away. It's not where the crowds are. 27 miles he goes. And while they're on the way, he asks them that famous question. Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? That's not what he asked of Mark, is it? He says to his disciples, verse 27, who do people say that I am? And they told him, some say John the Baptist. Herod was one of those people who said John the Baptist. Remember why he said John the Baptist? Because Jesus was doing miracles. And he heard that somebody was doing miracles and he felt guilty and was like, oh no, John is risen from the dead. Some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah, because there was the great promise that Elijah would come before the Christ would come. And some would say Elijah, and some would say other prophets. He's just a prophet. So Jesus, asking them, questioning them, he said in verse 29, but who do you say that I am? This is the first time that they've had to answer a question like this. Okay, now, you've been doing all this work for me. Who am I to you? And Peter gives that statement, right? You are the Christ, the Son of God, Matthew would tell us. But you are the Christ. You're the Holy One. You're the most anointed one. And 30, he warned them not to tell anyone. But again, what does that have to do with his new teaching? Here is the hard teaching at which he gives them, knowing that he is the Christ. Mark 8 and verse 31 is your transition in the book. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed, and after 3 days, rise again. That is a tough pill to swallow. And they needed to be as clear and as rested as possible to hear that their teacher is going to die. If you get news that someone you are close to is going to die in just a short amount of time, you want a little bracing for that, don't you? What about when you know they're going to suffer cruelly? You want to prepare yourself for that. And so Jesus teaches that he was going to do it. And Peter said, never. And Jesus said, get behind me, Satan. He still wasn't able to get it. His mind was still set on these physical things. He wasn't able to get it. But the crowds are still there. And Jesus summons the crowd, and this is what he taught the crowd, beginning in verse 34. He said with his disciples, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Mark doesn't tell us this statement until we learn that Jesus has to take up his cross. And what he's saying is that if you're going to follow me, you've got to die. And that's my purpose. Doesn't matter if it's recreation. Doesn't matter if it's work. Doesn't matter if it's family. Doesn't matter if it's church. I am not the most important thing. Because verse 35, for whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's sake will save it. You want to save it, lose it. That old oxymoron, or that old, not oxymoron, well, I guess it is an oxymoron. Paradox is the word I was looking for. That's what it's got to be. And you want to be clear when you've got something like that in your head. And so he closes out in verse 36. For what's it profit a man if he gains the whole world and he forfeits his soul? You went after everything you wanted. And so we talked about recreation. You went after all the pleasure you wanted and you got it. But you lost your soul. Was it worth it? And Jesus says, it ain't worth it. What's worth it is losing it now. Foregoing some pleasures now for the joy that is later. And so we close out by saying this. If I want to fulfill my purpose, and if I want to do my best, I must rest. But yet always striving to enter the rest that is best. From Hebrews chapter 3. Of where there is a rest that is promised for Christians. That eternal rest from where they rest from all their labors. Where there is no pain. There is no sorrow. There is joy. There is peace. There is love. And if I want to do that, and I want to participate in that, and I want to have fellowship in that, that requires me now forgetting myself and living for the sake of Christ. Rest up. But don't rest too hard. And don't play too hard. Because you lose out. I hope we are a people who now, after this year, will do a better job being Christians. We'll do a better job of being what God would have us to be. And as next year, we'll be a better part of being His people. His holy and special people. If you're subject to the invitation in any way this morning, and you're ready to become a child of God, or you need the prayer of the congregation, why don't you come now as we stand and as we sing.